Fáilte, my name is Andrew Healy, and I'm a lover and drinker of Irish whiskey. I'm on a journey of discovery to learn as much as I can about the great spirit of the Emerald Isle. Along that journey, I'm lucky enough to meet other people who are passionate about Irish whiskey, and the My Favourite Irish podcast is their story and their favourite Irish whiskey. Whether that's their current favourite, their first ever dram, or one that has a special place in their life. On today's episode, I got to spend some time recently with fellow Dubs, Michelle and Gareth McAllister, the owners of Ahaskra Distillery, in the village of the same name, which is in East Galway. When I visited, in mid-May of 2023, Michelle and Gareth were deep in preparation for the opening of their distillery in a converted watermill. We talked about their dream to one day distill in Ireland, the styles of whiskey that they will be producing, where they'll source their grain, and the style of single pot still Irish whiskey that they will ultimately produce. And we talked about their commitment to sustainability, their plans for future visitor experiences, and of course we talked about some history, because what's Irish whiskey without some history thrown into the mash bill? Whiskey? Yes, there was some of that too, as we sipped on their favourite Irish whiskey, which is their own Uish, the Triple Blend. Listen along. Fáilte Arash to My Favourite Irish. We are we're west of the Shannon for this one, in the village of, and I'm going to butcher the name, so I'm going to pass it over to Gareth and Michelle McAllister. Can you tell us where we are?
Well, we're in a village in East Galway called Ahaskra.
Okay, I'll do my best to keep getting that right as we continue this chat. So.
Well, it's just exactly how it is without the GH at the end. Just say it as it is without the GH.
Three syllables, a hand scrap.
Okay, fantastic. And we're going to talk about the village that you're here, that you're building your wonderful distillery in. I've had the pleasure of going around it this morning with you, so I've seen work in progress, I think would be the best way to describe it, but you're almost there.
And nearly work in progress.
Well, work in progress to get you started. And I know you've got lots of deadlines coming over the next couple of weeks, so we're going to talk about yourselves, your whiskey and the distillery and the village here and East Galway. So probably the best thing to do, I suppose, is to get a little bit of whiskey in our glasses to start that with. So you've poured some of your favourite Irish, which is a whiskey that you guys have made. So do you want to tell me a little about it?
Yeah, this is our entry level whiskey brand called Uish, or Uas Oscaliga.
Okay.
And this is it's a triple blend. It has single grain, single malt, single pot still. We have kind of capped the grain at 50% max. So okay, you got more of the good stuff, more of the pot still, more of the malt. And it probably is our favorite everyday. Well, it's my favorite everyday whiskey.
Excellent.
I have other day whiskies and special occasion whiskies, but for, you know, it, as a blend, it's easy to drink, it's smooth, and it has all three types of Irish characteristics in it. So
okay,
if you're starting your journey on Irish whiskey, it's a good one to start on.
Okay, so we'll talk more about it in a sec, but we should raise our glasses and do a couple of clinks and slaunches to both of you. Thank you for having me here, I appreciate it. So you said Oscaliga. What does it translate to, the anglicised version of the...
Well, Uas, or Culla Uas, or Uish.
Okay.
So what we, to help people, that's in our tag on the bottle, like O-O-S-H is, you know, how it's be anglicised to.
Okay.
He was the High King of Ireland, and he was the eldest brother of the Clan Culla brothers, who conquered all of Ireland and parts of Scotland in the 4th and 5th century. So... we named a whiskey after him because the whole Clancullagh story stems from him, and he was the High King of Ireland. So
okay,
it's the name of a person, the king, and if you look at our, you've got a kind of a historian sketch of what he would have looked like back then.
And we'll share some photos. Obviously, this is a podcast, so people can hear, but we'll share photos on the website so people can see the bottle. And while we're talking about that, I know you're, and we'll talk about it more when we talk about your distillery, but sustainability and zero emissions and carbon neutral is a big thing here for you. And this whiskey plays into that as one of your first releases. So I suppose it probably a good idea to share with folks the story behind this bottle. Literally, it ticks many green boxes.
I think it started, first of all, our sustainability journey from the old mill that we're renovating into the distillery. Repurposing one of these beautiful buildings, which are many, unfortunately, around the country of Ireland that are just left to rot and ruin, and that we never wanted to go about building a new structure when there were so many beautiful buildings here. So when we saw the old mill as it used to be, we decided this is where it should be. And that in itself is, you know, sustainability in a nutshell, yeah. You know, to repurpose. And then the journey continues from there with the bottle.
Yeah, so the packaging of Oosh is 100%, the bottle is 100% recycled glass.
Great.
And when you buy recycled glass that's 100%, it's actually more expensive than ordinary glass. I hope that will change. But there's 40%, it only consumes 40% of the energy to make, where compared to a traditional brand new bottle of glass. The label is all recycled textured paper. It's a wooden stopper and a cork base. Obviously, that's a sustainable material. The seal on top is not plastic. That's a vegetable cellulose biodegradable material. Biodegrades a matter of days in the soil. So everything about this packaging is sustainability. And then eventually, when our liquid is mature from a Hasker distillery, the spirit itself will be zero emissions.
Okay.
So it's our attempt at making the most sustainable spirit and the most sustainable packaging in a premium Irish whiskey.
Fantastic. And we'll talk more about your distillery in a few minutes. But this is available in the market now. Which markets is it available in? So obviously here, you can buy it here in Ireland.
We're in 12 countries at the moment and growing. We're just launching in the US, where we're targeting New York, Florida, and then California and Texas.
Yep.
And then we'll expand state. The US isn't easy. There's a lot of different things to do. But
it's 50 countries in all rolled into one.
Yeah.
So there's liquid on the water already on the way over to New York at the moment. So it's a big push for us this year to have more presence in the US.
Fantastic. Tying your sustainability into the distillery, you took me around the distillery earlier on, and thank you very much. It was wonderful to see it. I followed your marketing team have done a great job, because they are telling the story of how you are putting this together, and I know you've produced a number of videos that have told that story along the way, and good on them for getting kind of out front with sharing what's going on here, because I think for a lot of us to see a distillery being not quite built from scratch, because you're obviously restoring the mill building, it's been great to see it. So a big part of your focus here is what we've just touched on, the zero emissions. So can you tell us what you're doing in the distillery with that, so folks will know that it's not just this bottle that ticks the boxes, but it's your distillery as well?
Yeah, so this was a big contributor to carbon emissions is your energy source and how you energize your distillery. So our distillery, we have decarbonized that process by using 100% renewable electricity. It's an all-electric distillery, and we have, you know, we have 30 up to 30% of our electrical needs is generated on site through solar PV panels and hydro, and then the rest is sourced wind power. So bringing in, you know, using renewable electricity, but the trick is then how do you convert that into an energy medium that can drive a very energy intensive process like distillation, like the brewing and the distilling part of the distillery. And that's where we have combined technologies. We've got very high temperature heat pumps, we've got a very efficient closed energy storage system. And as you saw, we recover every bit of waste heat is recovered in the process and fed back into the energy store. So essentially, we power the whole distillery through high pressure hot water, which is kept hot and kept energized through heat pump technology, which means we're not burning any, we have no boiler on site, we're not burning any fossil fuels or gas, we have no chimney for a stack or for flue emissions. It's all a decarbonized energy process. Now, of course, there still is natural, like the fermentation process delivers CO2 as a byproduct, but you know that CO2 that was taken in from the barley when it was growing, and it's been released in the fermentation process. A phase two will be to look at carbon capture on that side of it. So, you know, there's so many elements of the whole supply chain and operation that we are looking at trying to decarbonize as much as possible.
Great. I know, Gareth, you've got a background that involved distilling, but it wasn't distilling of this fine liquid. You worked in another space where distilling was important.
Yeah, I'm a chemical engineer. I'm a certified distiller, but through my chemical engineering years, over 34, whatever it is, I've been involved in unit operations of distilling, you know, like actually separating alcohol and water is probably one of the easiest, you know, distillation separations you can do.
Okay.
I've done distillation units where I've been separating up to 18 different components.
Okay.
From large oil refineries down to large, you know, to large chemical plants, process plants. So it was always kind of like a thing to do at the end of my career is to have our own little distillery. And that's what it should have been. So we found this beautiful old building and we decided, well, why don't we maximize every square inch of space in it? And now it's turned out to be quite a sizable distillery.
Okay, and when it's up and running, what will capacity be, do you think? And I know when you took me round, there is room for expansion in there, obviously.
Yeah, we've built in, you know, right now as a nameplate capacity on, say, three shifts, it'll be around 750,000 litres of pure alcohol a year.
Okay.
We hope to get to double that over the next few years to get 12.5 million LPA.
Okay.
Through built-in expansion. That we can. And we've also a lot of space, as you saw, a lot of space at the back for future expansion as well.
Yeah, so. No, wonderful. So what styles of whiskey will you be making when you're up and running here?
We'll be doing single malt and single pot still.
Okay.
Originally. So probably split between, you know, 6 month campaigns of each.
Okay.
We're not doing peated whiskey. We do our Clancolor range, we do have a peated finish whiskey, but we're not doing a peated from the malt point of view. We're not putting any malt or peat into that process.
Okay.
Once you put it in there, you'll never get it out.
Yeah. So, okay.
We prefer to use the finishing process to generate our peated whiskies.
Okay. And obviously, when you took me around earlier on, the three pot stills are in place. You'll have, you told me if I was here next week, I'd be looking at something different. But lovely to see them there. They're almost commissioned, or they're about to be commissioned. Isn't that right? You're going to.
Yeah, we're so commissioning wise, where the power has been done, we're now on utilities, we're line flushing out tanks, then the brew house gets commissioned, and then finally the still house.
Okay.
So over the next, say, 3 to 4 weeks, all that is
great,
is happening. And what you're seeing at the moment is the main civil works are being finished, the front, the landscaping, the tarmac, all the external stuff has been finished by the end of this week.
Okay.
So if you came back next week, you'd see the front of it all
after that.
But as you can see internally, we're nearly there.
Yeah, and if folks want to, you know, see the progress, I would suggest they follow you guys on your respective social media outlets.
Yeah.
I know you guys do a great job on particularly Facebook and Instagram, so I would suggest they follow you there to see the progress, because it is wonderful to watch it being built. So I would suggest they do that. Here we are we're in East Galway, and obviously this is the Ballinasloe area, I think.
Yeah.
So what do we call it, the Hidden Heartland, is it that we call it here?
I
know.
Heartland.
Tourism Ireland has done a great job of giving all the regions of the country these wonderful names. Is sourcing your grains locally going to be a thing as we move
Absolutely.
Forward in the process?
Yeah. East Galway, Roscommon growers are already in touch with us. Obviously, you know, it all has to go to our local maltster, which we're going to be using. It's in Kildare. It's the most dangerous one for us.
Okay.
So the local grains will go there first, get malted, then be brought back. Obviously, the green barley that we use in our pot still will all be from local to our spec as well.
Great. And when you took me around, Gareth, you touched on five grains. So obviously things are about to change in the Irish single pot still world. You enlightened me that the technical file is with our friends in Brussels for updating. Do you want to let people know a little about that and how you'll be using five grains in a pot still in various?
Yeah, well, at the moment you're limited to, besides malt and green barley, you're limited to max of 5% other grains. So the technical file has been, from an Irish perspective, revised and has to go to Europe for approval. I think that's what's currently underway, and that will hopefully bring us up to, I don't know what the final percentage will be. The recommendation from a lot of us has been to have freedom up to about 30% of the grains. So that will then, the way Irish whiskey and pot still was made in the past, it had a lot more than 5% other grains in it. Wheat, rye, oats, for example. Clancullagh, the original Clancullagh in the 1800s as a single pot still had that as well in it. So it will give a lot of freedom for us to be more innovative with our pot still styles, using different percentage, in our mash bill. And so it'll be very exciting for distilleries like us to produce the first freer pot still that we can and call it Irish whiskey.
I know there's been a push from a lot of distillers for this. And I think a number of people, I don't know if Fionnán O'Connor takes all the credit with his PhD that he's currently doing and looking at heritage mash bills. But I think all of us are, and I know you are, as people who are going to be making this, you have more opportunity to look backwards, to actually look forwards in many ways. And I think it's exciting times for everybody. So
absolutely. I mean, traditionally all Irish whiskey was like that. And probably a lot of it was peated and double distilled. I mean, the unpeated triple distilled thing is really only a recent phenomenon in Irish whiskey, and maybe good marketing. But
we have
there's a lot more to Irish whiskey
and
it's like we like seeing other distilleries coming on stream. That means more innovation, because everyone has to be a little bit different. And that'll just strengthen the overall Irish whiskey category really be a force to reckon with against the likes of the Scottish or the Japanese, Canadian, or even bourbon.
So. Yeah. And the point you just made there is obviously referring to our friends in Middleton in County Cork and what they've been doing.
I didn't say that.
I know you didn't. That's why I'm saying it.
Did you hear me say that?
But you've also made a great point in that with all of the new distilleries coming online, we can kind of ride on the coattails of the success of what they have done. If we look back at history, they essentially saved
it. Sean and I are from Portmarnock in North Dublin, and we grew up socialising in what do we call it, the country club?
Yeah.
Which is the old Jemison house.
Really?
Mm.
And the bar that's still there today is called the Jemison Bar.
Yeah.
And that's
the start of the journey, really.
We've been drinking. So Jemison really inspired us, because we used to hang around their house a lot. We're members of Portmarnock Golf Club.
Very nice.
The links, which is the part old Jemison golf course.
I didn't know that. Okay. Yeah. Well, of course, here's, because I'm from the other side of Dublin, I'm from Kiltearn, so here's three dubs sitting in East Galway, and you guys, I've walked around with you. You seem to have really given this place a lift for what you're doing. The community seems to have warmed to you and what you're doing. And obviously, ultimately, when this place is up and running, this will be a sizable employer in this part of the country. Mm-hmm. So it's lovely to see your dream become a reality where it actually benefits a small village that I suppose technically is a little backwater in East Galway. So
they were very good, the community here, on opening up and bringing us in and supporting us, and I think it's very important when you have people like us to include the community and make them feel part of the journey. And they definitely have come on the journey with us, because without a lot or the majority of people that work in the cafe, which is part of the distillery, or those that are working on the repurposing of the distillery, are all local. They're all local workers.
Yeah.
And that's always been our thing is to employ as many local people. Obviously, there's some very technical positions that, you know, you have to be qualified. If they're here in this area, obviously, they can apply or whatever. But our goal, our thing was always to be inclusive of the community and their skills and their ability to help us on our way. You know?
Yeah, which is great. It's obviously, yeah, it scored you big brownie points, which is...
It can go either way. You know, you can come into a wee village like this and they can go, you know, what are you dubs doing in here? So, you know, it could have been a tough one,
yeah,
but it wasn't. We were lucky. We were very lucky. But from day one, we included the community, yeah, because without them, we wouldn't be here.
Yeah, no, so. It makes sense. And on the subject of the building that you bought, it's an old mill building. Mm. And now, I know there's a number of distilleries around the country have gone into old mill buildings. What was it about the building that drew you in?
The building.
Okay.
Stonework. I mean, you know, if anybody's following us on social media, that we'll see it now. The beautiful stonework. It came up well. But when we, Gareth and myself, first saw it, it was absolutely covered in vegetation, and trees were growing in places they shouldn't have been growing. And but underneath it all, we could see that this building had not finished the story it needed to tell. There was a lot more it needed to give. I mean, for me, it was always the building. I just thought the building was so lovely. But when you think back, you know, we're doing an eco distillery now, but when you think back, this was a flour mill that used water. So way back then, they were doing what we're all thinking we're brilliant at doing now. They were doing it already.
Generating their own power.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So we're just bringing it back to its, you know, former glory.
Yeah, similar to what we touched on there with the mash bills. We're looking backwards at what we did in the past.
Yeah.
Yeah. And obviously we've touched on whiskey and we've got, you know, whiskey here in our glass. We'll come to Clancullagh in a minute, but am I right in thinking from what I've read that you're the gin queen here? Is that fair comment?
I don't know about the queen bit, but yeah.
She's definitely a queen.
Definitely into the gin, yeah.
And again, we'll share pictures of it, but your gin has, and I know running the business of a distillery is a very, very expensive thing to do to get it up and running. It's capital intensive. There's issues with cash flow. And I know it's one of the reasons why a lot of Irish distilleries have a white spirit of some sort that they sell. It helps with cash flow. Your Xin Gin, is that how you pronounce it?
Xin
Gin. Okay.
Yeah.
That a tip of the hat, I think, to your time in Asia, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And it was also, I know a lot of places do that. They start on the gin, but that was never our issue. It was never our plan. Our plan was always to do a gin and a whiskey. We never set out to go, let's just do a gin and get some cash in. It was never like that at all. It was, I mean, we both drink both. We're both whiskey drinkers and gin drinkers. He's more obviously into the whiskey and that, and me and the gin, but we drink both of them. But it was never, oh, let's just do this while the whiskey was maturing or whatever. It was always going to be on par. They were
it's
going
a
to go.
Separate brand. It's its own brand. Its own identity.
Yeah.
It's a pretty sexy bottle, I have to say.
Well, the creative half. It's all Michelle's work.
That's how mad my mind works.
See how simple the whiskey packaging is, and then you see the gin, and that's basically Michelle and me.
Let your mind run free. No, I think the bottle is, and obviously it's won a slew of awards.
Yeah.
So obviously the bottle looks great, but what's in the bottle
is
obviously good as well. So that'll continue.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. Obviously successful for you.
And it is a mixture of when we lived in Asia. And it's a mixture of botanicals, of Asian botanicals and Irish botanicals. So,
folks who've listened to these in the past and know me know I'm not a gin drinker.
Yeah.
I've never been, and I just can't.
Yeah.
I can't do it, but I know there's a market for it. So one of the things that I've seen in kind of artisan and craft gin production is obviously a lot of distillers are doing it, not just here.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, doing it across the water, but also in America and Asia. My big issue has been when the gin is matched with tonic, and often it's a commercial tonic, you know, a Canada Dry or a Schweppes. You guys have put an awful lot of time and effort into your sourcing of the botanicals into the production to create this beautiful spirit.
Mm.
Are there any particular tonics that enhance or go better or yeah. make a gin worse?
I actually think that, I mean, we've been told the Shin Gin is lovely without tonic, so, but I like to drink it with fever tree.
Okay.
I think it brings out all the aromas of the different botanicals. I don't think it works very well with Schweppes, but then each to their own, you know, yeah. That's just my taste.
Okay. And here, I know we have fever tree in California where I'm based, but it's probably considered a premium tonic. Would
yeah.
that be a fair
yes.
comment?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. You touched Gareth on Clancolla earlier. This is your, I suppose, your offering beyond the entry point. Great story behind it.
So yes. The Clancolla range starts from year 7. It's always an age statement. We
okay.
So from year 7 up to, we've got a 20-year-old as well. We have a 7, 11, 13, 19, and 20. And they're different styles. The later are 19 and 20 year old are all single malts, finished in different ways. The 7 is a single grain, the 11 is a blend of grain and malt, and the 13 is also a blend. So the Clancolla, the McAllister's made whiskey in the 1800s, and Clancolla was their most successful brand. But like a lot of Irish distilleries and brands around the 1920s, 30s, it went south, and Clancolla died, and we were fortunate enough to be able to re-register it and bring
okay.
it back to life.
It was very popular in the States. It was a yeah. big seller in the States in the 19th century.
And there's actually a lot of societies, Clancolla societies in the US.
Really?
You can actually do a DNA test to see if you're part of Clancolla. So the story is basically there's three brothers, and Culla Ush was the eldest brother, hence we named the Ush brand after him. And these three brothers conquered all of Ireland and parts of Scotland in the 4th century. And Culla Ush became the High King of Ireland. The way he became the High King of Ireland and what happened afterwards, you could read up on our website or on the packaging. But anybody who descended from those three brothers is part of the Clancolla. And there's a lot of us, hundreds of Irish names and Scottish names, surnames that are part of the Clancolla.
Okay.
So you can actually do a DNA test to see if you are. You can check if your surname is part of the Clancolla. There's a lot of local, we didn't know this at the time, but one of the brothers actually settled his kingdom on the Roscommon East Galway border, not far from where we are here.
Of course he did. It just had to be.
And then in the Battle of Aucrum, just up the road here in 1691, the Clancolla came together to fight, you know, against the Williamites at the time. Unfortunately, they lost. But there's a lot of probably dead members of Clancolla just up the road here in terms of.
Okay.
We didn't know any of this when we happened upon here.
So it's a good story. It's a Irish. This is before the Anglo-Saxons. This is before the Vikings. These are true Irish Gaels, and
okay.
this is a true Irish Gael brand. And then the family connection too. So this has been a personal thing for Michelle and I, that we always wanted to revive Clancolla. And then Ush was basically an afterthought. What would we name our entry level?
But it ties into the same story.
Yeah.
Same story, yeah.
Yeah, it's lovely. And you've obviously done the DNA test, and I assume you passed.
Because Michelle's maiden name is Colgan. That's part of the Clancolla too. There's loads of names. I think all your viewers probably are part of Clancolla.
or honorary members of it.
Yes.
That's great. So looking forward, obviously you showed me around today, and it's you're almost there. Dates for people, obviously we've now seen post, obviously there is still parts of the pandemic hanging around, but tourism has returned.
Yeah.
Thankfully, I've seen that in the time I've been here. Our visitors are back, not just here in Ireland, but I'm seeing them where I live. You're hoping to kind of be on the map for people who are going east to west or west to east. I will say it's a lovely little detour off the Dublin-Galway road to get here.
Yeah.
And I would encourage people to go on the Ore Roads and just 10, 15 miles of just beautiful dry stone walls. And obviously we're here in May, so lots of sheep and lambs out there as well.
It's like stepping into this lovely slice of kind of semi-rural Ireland here.
Yeah.
Looking, so when will visitation officially begin?
July is when the public will be able to come on tours. We will have a couple of tours before that, but I hope they're not listening, but they'll be our guinea pigs.
Okay, but you've got to cut your teeth in some way, you need people to give you honest feedback.
Yeah,
and
absolutely,
we're all, I know I am, we're all always looking to be better. And but obviously there will be, I know there's an area out the back that Garrett showed me, which with time will be a phenomenal place for visitor experiences. And you'll become a little hospitality and event center here as well.
So next year's plan.
You may not have written kind of your initial tasting and experiences for people, but any idea what they'll be offered when they come?
Well, what we wanted from the beginning was basically to show people how a whiskey and gin distillery operates. So they're going to come in, they're going to be able to smell, hear the equipment, walk around things, touch things where it's safe to be touched, but they're actually going to see a working distillery, but also in an old mill complex in a protected structure that was built nearly 300 years ago, and learn if they're not that interested in whiskey or gin, they could also have an experience to learn about how an old flour mill worked. So part of our hospitality will be one floor of that events building will be a mini museum.
Fantastic.
And it'll have restored equipment from the mill on show, be an audio visual experience. So there should be something there for everyone. But from the kind of the whiskey side of things, this is actually a working distillery. If you want to see how distillery works in all its good and warts and all, then come and see us.
Yeah, you almost said good and bad there. There's no bad in what you're doing. Everything you're doing is
I suppose,
Well, you get to see the inner workings, so to speak, which I think is important.
Well, that was always one of our goals. We didn't want people to come and be told, in that room behind that wall or behind that door is, the stills or whatever. We wanted people to come and physically see things and see and hear and smell a real distillery. Because I think every distillery is very different, but yet they're all similar.
Yeah.
So you got to do something that's a little bit unusual.
And I suppose being that little bit off the beaten track here.
Yeah.
You want people to have an experience that they remember. You know, you've done a great job with the front of the building here, with the lovely glass front that shows the tree and the gin still is there as well. I joked with Gareth when we were going around that it was going to be, you're going to see that picture all over Instagram when you have visitors here. And that's a kind of a great way to add to people's experiences.
Absolutely.
They can actually see. To your point, you don't want them touching, especially when things are turned on. And I agree with you on smelling. I think that's one of the things I've learned on my journey, not just in whiskey, but previously in wine. That smell when you're in a cellar or you're in a winery when fermentation's happening. And here, Gareth and I talked about it. I think a lot of the magic actually happens in the brew house.
Yeah.
That's where a lot of the flavor comes from. So when something is fermenting, being able to smell that kind of sour farmhousey unhopped type beer, to me there's something magical in that, and good on you guys for wanting to share that with people when they're coming through. So I'm hoping to come back. I don't know, maybe next year, maybe the year after. It'll be a different scene. I hoping that the cafe that's down below us where we're meeting will be buzzing. I'm hoping that your distillery and visitor center will be buzzing as well. But I'm looking forward to it. I'm delighted to have met you and to see another wonderful Irish distillery.
Thanks for taking the time to come out and see us.
It's a good diversion between Athlone and Galway. So,
absolutely.
It's just 10 minutes off the main motorway, highway.
Yeah. And with that, I think we'll wrap it up. I think we should probably raise our glasses again and finish a little bit of what's left in our glasses. So, Sláinte. Thank you very much for
having me.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it a lot. So just for folks who are listening, we'll share all the links below to the websites, and we'll put up some pictures, etc., of what I saw and the various brand pictures. And in the meantime, sláinte to everyone from us in East Galway.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thanks for taking the time to listen to this episode. You'll find more episodes wherever you get your podcasts, and you'll find the My Favourite Irish video series at irishwhiskeylad.com. That's Irish Whiskey with an E, LAD.com. If you've enjoyed this episode, I'd appreciate it if you could take a couple of minutes to leave a review or a rating at your favourite podcast platform. Until next time, sláinte wá.